Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Join Cycling for the Tour de France Stage 3 Recap, a sprint stage from Piacenza to Torino, one of the longest sprint stages we've ever covered, particularly in the Tour de France. Sometimes you have these in the Giro, 231 kilometers long, and it felt like every part of that, all flat, except for a couple of categorized climbs with offering 1 point, but the last one was 50Ks from the finish and only about 4%. So definitely a nailed on sprint stage. And was there any pre-stage issues, Benji, drama, anything like that?
Not really drama. There was talk about who's going to take the yellow jersey today, because we got to keep in mind four riders are on 0 seconds before the stage starts. So the tiebreaker is stage positions. And I think Carapaz needs to take roughly 13 positions to get in yellow compared to Pogacar. Evenepoel, two positions. Pogacar probably doesn't want to get yellow because they don't want to control tomorrow's Galibier stage. Vingegaard, same story. Remco is a bit double-sided, because even if Remco takes yellow, I do not believe that they have to change their racing strategy, right? Because they can still just ride and not control the race, because it's not like if Quickstep don't control the race that Visma and UAE are just going to let each other ride off into the distance. They'll still control each other, right?
Yeah, the yellow jersey is an illusion. It doesn't change anything in week one of the race. It's about time gaps. That's why Poggi was kind of... he looked visibly annoyed almost yesterday, Benji, when he took the yellow jersey on stage placements. And at least normally when you take the yellow jersey, you have the benefit of at least some time gain. But
it's it's an illusion when it comes to control for teams that are not Visma and UAE. I think those are the two teams that don't want yellow.
I mean, even if Visma have yellow, it doesn't like change the plan or anything. It's just annoying. I think it's, you got to do like an extra hour of media, you gotta wear the jersey, you've gotta be at the front of the stage presentation the next morning, you're around a lot more people, you gotta do an extra doping control maybe, which takes time. I think you lose at least an hour every day you're in yellow, an extra hour of recovery. So it is a bit of a burden this early.
How much does the yellow jersey or the distinctive jersey still impact the time trial on stage 7 when it comes to, if you take it today in the sprint, will that be a negative thing, or is Santini's skin suit good enough to the point that you don't know that, or is it not customized as well as, for example, for Remco, the Castelli skin suit?
I don't really know, to be honest. I'm not the aero expert. I mean, Vingegaard seemed to go pretty quick last year with it. and Poggi wore the white one, did he not, in 2020? I think it's not ideal. You have to do an extra fitting, which again is more time. So it's just another additional annoyance, even if it does net out as the same speed. The other thing today, Benji, was the 3K rule, where if there's a crash in the final 3 kilometers and you're held up or involved, you get put on the same time as the group you're in. That got moved to 5 kilometers to go, which... I don't know why in particular this stage, but it did. And
I think it's because the first sprint stage.
Okay.
I don't necessarily mind them testing this out, because it's a bit of a test phase for the UCI to try these things. And moving it from 3 to 5 kilometers means that the GC riders will fight for a position until 5 kilometers to go. And then on paper, they would move back gradually and let the sprint teams take over, because then the GC riders are on paper safe, right?
From my perspective, it worked really well. I will get into it in a second, but I actually think it does make a difference. There's been studies, I think a few years ago now, about the 3K rule inducing crashes, because then you fight more to get to 3Ks to go. But the problem with 3Ks is there's not much time to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And also, do the sprinters teams want to let you be in front at 3Ks to go? Whereas at 5Ks to go... You know, it goes without saying, you have extra time to move to the back and
there's less urgency in the swap.
Yeah, because no sprint lead out starts at 5Ks to go hitting the wind, ideally, unless you have a train of HCC, back at 15 years ago. So and no team apart from maybe Alpecin has that. But yeah, nothing staged. There was a bit of words between Pidcock and Pogacar via some journos, which was, you know, kind of amusing, but really not much. I mean, people talking about yesterday, but tomorrow's the next GC day. So we're looking at Carapaz, ironically, as you told me before, Benji, ironically, despite the 5K rule, there's actually a GC rider that's going to try and go for the sprint in this stage, because that's Carapaz for the yellow jersey. At least that's what EF said. EF said Marin Vandenberg would literally be the lead out for Carapaz.
Which, it's a bit of a shame for Marin Vandenberg, but I do understand that the likelihood of Carapaz taking yellow on today's stage is higher than Marin Vandenberg being competitive in the sprint at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. So yeah, the stage started. No one jumped. ASO probably thinking, ooh, this is a problem, because Arkea, they've been promoted to actually a serious team that wins stages. DSM have, in theory, got Jakobsen, and Total is probably the, and Uno X, they don't go in these suicide breaks.
Total should, in my opinion.
Total is like, come on, know your place. Like, if you're bringing these guys to the race, whoever they, you know, they are, some of them can go on the breakaway. Eventually they did. I mean, this is why, if they dotted maybe another three or four categorized climbs on the course, then maybe Abrahamsen really goes in. He jumped and then stopped, and so there was no break. Rickard and Jacob Alula just start pacing. And
Otherwise, we'd be there forever.
Yeah.
It was, if no one started pacing in the peloton, because there's no urgency to do this, because there's no breakaway, then we could have been here at 10 o'clock doing this podcast. So thank you very much to Alpecin and Jacob for pacing a little bit on the stage so that the stage would arrive home on time. But like you said, every now and then there were attacks, and there was a bit of a dropping back to the peloton directly after, once those attackers got their goal. And the intermediate sprint game was a sprint between Philipsen and Pedersen. Pedersen took that. I feel like the Alpecin sprint train kind of derailed a little bit, is what Luke told us in the WhatsApp chat while I was climbing Col d'Ordino. So I'm trusting him completely on that. And Pedersen won the points there. So it's a full sprint point. It's like there's 20 points there this time, because there's no breakaway. That's actually quite useful.
That's the same as winning a mountain stage or coming, I think, third in the final sprint.
Yeah, but on paper, the green jersey people won't be winning mountain stages.
yeah, true. But, you know, third in the final sprint's 20 points, I think. And then I think in a stage one, which Pedersen sprinted in, that was a 30 point stage. I think, you know, you're taking 20 points there. So it's important to go for those. If you, who was not sprinting there? I think Van Aert didn't sprint, so he's not going for green.
I didn't watch. I was on mountain. Yeah. So
Van Aert's clearly not going for green. And, but yeah, I think Pedersen has a really good chance, particularly after this finish of taking green. If you look at the categorizations throughout the race, he's got a really good chance. But moving along, Grelier jumps to go in like some sort of later break on the hills. He's eventually caught, and then the GC team settle in for the biggest pissing contest you've ever seen. It's UAE and Visma both want the left-hand side of the road because it's the fastest.
Why?
There's a right wind from the right, and also there's loads of roundabouts where the left side is way, way quicker.
Yeah.
So Soler, Tratnik are beefing.
Benoit and Sivakov
are beefing. Pollitt and Kelderman don't really beef. They kind of they just ride normally.
The funniest part for me was after the roundabout. So they're all fighting for positions, and every now and then a UAE would, for example, be at the front. UAE had the left side for the majority of this segment, in my opinion. So they were winning the left side argument, because the goal that they have is, the reason that they want to be on the left side of the road and not in between other riders is so that they only have to protect one side of their GC rider. So they want to try and have their train on the left side so that Pogacar is protected by the roadside on one side. Yeah. And then they can try to kind of protect Pogacar with a bit of a bubble of riders around them. So that's the idea behind it, to prevent them being caught up in crashes, etc. So that's a pissing contest we have. And after roundabouts, so on one end, there was UAE at the front. We go into a roundabout. They take the wrong side of the roundabout. And we see the Visma boys on the good side of the roundabout.
I was shouting it to you. I was like, don't do it, Jan. Don't do it. I don't know if it was Jan. And he did it. He closed UAE, and it just made everyone so angry.
You were definitely shouting, don't do it, Jan.
It makes no difference. And sometimes this is another good example of like teams often are creating the danger, the very danger they're trying to avoid. If UAE and Visma just ride side by side and say, we're just going to maintain this position, we don't need to sprint each other, we don't need to half wheel each other. You, first of all, we both of your guys at the front can stay there longer, meaning you can get deeper into the final.
Yeah.
And you're not left isolated. And secondly, there's not so much moving around and jostling for position and swinging to and forward and guys trying to move up. But anyway.
And then in the next roundabout, it was the other way around. And honestly, this pissing contest between Visma and UAE in those last 20 kilometers
is the biggest entertainment of the stage in Italy.
It's the funniest thing that happened in this day. There was nothing else that happened, to be honest, outside of some attacks and the intermediate sprint. And we get to the sprint running now. We've got those GC teams fighting. I didn't see Bora really. They seem to be less involved, more to the back.
Yeah.
More like, we'll let it happen and we'll keep ourselves to the back. And hopefully that's a safe position. At Remco, similar story. We saw the EF train getting towards the front with major sprinter Richard Carapaz, El Jaguar de Tulcan. Does he need a new nickname as a sprinter, or is a Jaguar good at sprinting?
Jaguars are fast when they need to be. When they need to be, they can be fast. And that is Carapaz. But yeah, Trattning moves up. He positions Vingegaard as well as Jorgensen. Pogacar's there in fine position too. I was worried a little bit when they came into the straight last. From 9Ks to 5Ks was 4Ks absolute straight. I was worried there were spectators. I wasn't worried. I was worried because there were spectators literally standing on the road on that straight, which was extremely scary with maybe, I don't know, 6-7 Ks to go, especially as Poggy was right in the gutter.
As a spectator, your picture or video that you're taking is not worth more than these riders staying upright.
People at music concerts and cycling, it's like, what are you doing? And that woman, that Egypt yesterday, had her phone out, got knocked out of her hand, and then she tried to go into the peloton to get her phone.
So fucking stupid.
I know it's instinctual, but I don't know. If you stand, I don't understand. Again, I've said it many times. I don't understand the mentality to stand there for 6 hours or 5 hours, wait for a race to come, and then don't watch it. But
I think the rules when it comes to going to the race is pretty straightforward, right? One, do not touch the riders. Two, don't stand on the road. Three, don't use flares because you look like an idiot and it's fucking annoying. Four, animals on a leash. That's one. And the last one I can think of is phones. Don't use them over the barriers or over the roadside.
Don't extend your arm over the barriers or into the road. I also probably wouldn't take a dog to a Tour de France stage in 35 degree heat. But
that's bad for the dog in the first place.
Me personally. There were unfortunately some crashes. You know, it's almost an inevitability in these high-speed sprint stages. Pedersen went down. We saw it was out of a roundabout where the two waves came together. I think he had either chopped his own front wheel or got chopped. He went down very, very hard, but he did get back up and came back. Armirel crashed coming out of the gutter into a roundabout, not at particularly high speed. He seemed okay. MVDP then had a mech, which is important. I would say Alpecin, Benji, they because this is a UAE style sprint until the last K, wide-ish road, space to move up. Like UAE sprint, Alpecin went with their strategy of not coming to the front too early. DSM were at the front very early, as is normal for them. Alpecin never got it together, this sprint. They never got it together. Now, maybe that big move was eventually coming, but MVDP then having a mech with 6Ks to go, he was never coming back. So now you're missing your last man, and they never even moved up. I could see they were trying to move up with one rider, and so they had a bit of a nightmare, actually, their lead out today.
Exactly. And we see other teams also. We have in the middle Lotto by their side. I was looking for, is Wout van Aert in a sprint? Didn't really see him initially. I was trying to figure out, is Groenewegen there? Does he still have a lead out? Is it Mesgets? Is it Matthews? Actually don't know who was the last rider for Groenewegen today, but I'd like to know for the sake of the next couple of sprint stages, because I'd love to know what the order in the lead out train is. But the whole sprint scenario, we got over those last into those last 5 kilometers, but it's still dangerous. It's super chaotic. And we see a crash happening on the left side of the road. I got to be honest. I'm watching this race with Patrick on the couch. And this man sees a blip of a wheel turning a little bit in like the far distance. And he's like, there's a crash. And I've got no clue what happened in the peloton. I don't see it at all. Seconds later, I see half the peloton down. Well, 20 riders?
It's more just like if you see space through the riders, more than was before, then there will have been a crash, unfortunately.
How many riders were involved?
I think maybe 10.
Oh, okay.
It was a bit deeper in the peloton on the right-hand side as the peloton looks at it. And it was mostly the Israel train, although I can see that Ackerman finishes with Carapaz. So I feel like he wasn't in, he kind of been involved. Yeah. But a lot of Israel guys down, Covetous guys down, but also not Coquard. So Van Aert very nearly crashed. Very, very close. It's always when you see the lead out man of the sprinter stop and look back, then there's a pretty high likelihood that their sprinters nearly crashed. And you saw Laporte looking back, so that was danger signals for Visma. I think the 5K rule worked, Benji.
Yep.
I think it actually worked. At 5Ks, Visma, Ineos, and UAE all just went to the side and did what they're supposed to do, went fully back, and the sprinters teams who'd been waiting, DSM and co, came to the front and took over. And I actually think it worked. And then eventually, thankfully, it looks like none of those GC guys were involved in what was a very high-speed crash in the middle of the peloton, not really right at the front.
But did it hinder other sprinters? Because
for sure,
I was looking at the front angle of the shot and Alpecin wasn't there, but they weren't there in the first place. They were probably hindered by that crash because they were on that side of the road before the crash happened. And I was looking at the teams that were doing the lead out, and on the left, I saw DSM. On the right, I saw Anton Marché. And then I saw individual rides like Runewegen, like the Lee still trying to fight for his position. And EF had Betiol trying to lead out for Carapaz. And it was very chaotic. And I got to be honest, with a kilometer to go, I had no clue who was going to win.
I didn't know who was in the group. I didn't know who was sprinting. I didn't know if lead outs became sprinters. Honestly, I'm rewatching it now. It was very clear there was a huge split. It was clear that Phillips and Van Aert and Cavendish were not there. So maybe three of the top six favorites were not there in the sprint. Intermarché were well represented, but we come through 1K to go or 800 meters to go. And this is what I don't know who Intermarché were going for today. I have a feeling Intermarché were going for Gerben Theyssen. Because if you look at the last sweeping left-hand bend, Turnison is leading out and with like 500 meters to go, 600 meters to go, but there's no Binny. Binny's in 10th position. Groenewegen's on his wheel. I think it's Mezgetz who was actually the last man for Groenewegen. And then Theyssen realizes he's too far forward and kind of gets washing machine back.
Yeah.
But he wasn't doing the lead out for Binny. Otherwise, he would have kept kicking.
He went for both riders.
It looks like, they both got to sprint. And then because Theyssen was on the front too early, he just didn't become an option. Bennett's lead out gets swamped by Sturven on the left-hand side, but Pedersen didn't follow Sturven initially, and he eventually finds him. Sturven kicks again. Groenewegen's on the barriers at 250. Binny's in front of him, so he has more space with his wheel in front. And then Pedersen launches 200 meters to go. Binny comes out of the wheel, goes back to Pedersen's wheel a little bit. Pedersen's swinging all over the road, actually. And Binny just has enough space on the barriers to come underneath him. Gaviria coming on the right-hand side. Groenewegen trying to slip through. But Binyam Girmay wins what ends up being a reduced bunch sprint. Not for because of hills. And a historic win for him. Huge win for Intermarché. Theyssen realizes he's won after not really sprinting at all. Richard Carapaz finishes 14th. A word on that in a second. But just a great sprint from Binny, Benji. And this was this is what, for a man who crashed twice in the Giro before really getting to show what he could do, this has got to be almost sweeter than winning. It has to be sweeter than winning one of those Giro stages. I'm not even sure the plan would have been for him to come to the Tour de France were it not for that Giro disappointment.
Exactly. It's like, it's as if it was written in the starts. It's weird to say, as if it was written in the starts for him to crash out of the Giro, then come to the Tour de France instead and win the stage. Because like, without that crash, he's probably not riding the Tour de France. We see this sprint. Intermarché is investing their whole lead out train into Gerben Theyssen, and Binyam's the one that wins. I wonder if that will change stuff for the coming weeks, because Binyam's sprint was really impressive.
It was impressive,
and
yeah.
When it comes to the Giro, I was already impressed by Binyam's sprint in the first two stages before he really crashed out. So he looked quick, but I wasn't sure about like the pure flat sprints. Because in the past, he's that versatile sprinter that gets that. Like,
his positioning's been the problem when it's been 100 guys, yeah.
And today he fought for his own position in a Tour de France sprint. Yes, it benefits him that Alpecin's not there with an entire sprint train, that it's pure chaos on the road. It's maybe a bit easier because there's no blitz sprint train at the front except for their own. So it's just very impressive to see this from Binyam. And the man walked into cycling like crazy. Like, I remember the good old days when he was riding that Belgian ChatGPT race for the juniors. Don't know what it's called, with and beat Remco in that one race. Stavelo or something.
Axel Minster Stavelot or something.
That's the first time I heard of him. Then I signed him on Pro Cycling Manager and became pretty good. But in real life...
then he went to Delco. Then we all assumed he had a buyout clause. And
Delco died.
Yeah, and that actually wasn't true. He had a 4-year contract on a bad Pro Conti team after showing that he was an elite rider.
It's weird to say, but it's good for Binyam that Delco died.
Yeah, of course. And then Wiesbeck picked him up, and the rest is history. It's a huge win for him.
And you've said it before, multiple times in the past, the fact that a rider like Binyam ends up on Intermarché, which a team with not that much budget.
No.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah, well, Luke's saying he had bigger offers maybe from Quickstep or UAE. I think UAE, that might have been after Gent Wevelgem. I don't know if that was before he signed with the extension or before he signed the initial contract, but certainly after he won Gent Wevelgem, he would have had the pick of the bunch, and he actually extended there. So I think a really, really nice opening three stages for parity in cycling, Benji. We go with... Who won stage one? Bardet for DSM, Vauquelin for Arkea, and now Binny for Intermarché. Three of the teams with the smaller budgets winning the opening Tour de France stages. Really, really nice to see. And also Binny making history as well. That is fantastic to see. So he was very emotional in the interview afterwards. So historical victory for Eritrea and Africa as well.
Just a very romantic start to the Tour de France. Yeah. And to see Binyam win this flat sprint against sprinters that on paper, I'd say Groenewegen has the fastest sprint compared to him if you see them head-to-head on a flat sprint. But then there were small things that happened in the sprint, like I think De Lee jumping to the wheel of Stuyven. Pedersen couldn't take the wheel of Stuyven.
Yeah.
A bit in the wind there, that hinders Pedersen a bit. Then De Lee's involved in a lot of hindering, by the way, in the last few meters. De Lee moves to the right. Kind of impacting Groenewegen's line. I don't think this would have changed anything when it comes to the results.
Groenewegen had his chance. I could see him there. I was like, you better jump now, buddy, because if you're, say there's like the lead out and then 1, 2, 3 and you're the third sprinter and they're like 2 meters off the barriers.
Yeah.
Binny's always going to jump in that space.
Yeah.
So if you don't jump and beat him to that spot, he's going to jump cleanly into that space. And he waited and the gap never opened up. So Binny didn't hinder Groenewegen illegally, but if the yellow card system isn't in play yet, but for me...
De Lee, you mean?
Binny didn't hinder Groenewegen. De Lee hindered him.
Oh yeah, you're fair. Yeah.
But the yellow card system, I think this is a very clear example. Pedersen, to me, yellow card. Because he starts his sprint on the other side of Stuyven. So he jumps from Stuyven to the left as he's looking at it, almost to the left third of the road. Then he decides he's going to cross all the way back to the other side and he leaves just a bike length opening Binny. And so he doesn't close Binny, but we have to have sprinters sprinting in a straight line, Benji.
Not the rule. The rule is you need to have danger. And if you leave space like that for Binny to pass...
Yeah, but the consequence of that action is you're endangering other people because you're creating a wave. And then, he needs to sprint. I think it's a yellow card.
I get that.
It should be a yellow card.
But for it to be a yellow card, I think the rules need to change.
Probably, yeah. And De Lee, maybe very marginal movement, but in the end he does move and hinders Groenewegen. But that can happen on the barriers. It's not like a huge swing, but I understand why he did it. But is that... I also don't know what is the yellow card offense, Benji?
Well,
we don't know.
There's a list of it. They've adapted the rules. It's now in the rules that specific actions can have yellow cards. By the way, if you don't know what the yellow card system is, it's been introduced or will be introduced on the 1st of August. So it doesn't count yet, by the way, for the Tour de France. It's going to be the 1st of August, if I recall. And then if you get X amount of yellow cards, you get a suspension of X amount of days. If you get, I think, 2 yellow cards within the same stage race or 1-day race, you're out of the race. And suspended for was it 7 days?
7 days, yeah.
And if you have their three of them in a 1 month period, then it is 14 day suspension and a disqualification from the race that you're in. If there's six within a year, then you're getting binned for shockingly only 30 days. But those are then, to be clear, if you get, for example, two in the Tour de France and you get disqualified, those two don't count anymore within those six in a year.
I don't know. I still... Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. And at first I thought that didn't make sense, but going through the rules, it does make sense, but it's so complex that I can't even explain it.
Yeah. I think it starts on August 1.
Yeah.
It starts after the Tour de France. So we'll see it in action in the Vuelta, maybe in the sprints there. But I think we got to have guys sprinting straight. I mean, we've been saying it for 5 years.
Talking about yellow, who's in yellow?
Richard Carapaz, El Jagua de Tulcan with the lead out of Vandenberg. Vandenberg probably should have braked, actually, to let him come across ahead of him. But anyway, Carapaz finishes 14th. I should probably actually read out the top 10 first. Binyam Girmay wins ahead of, we didn't mention him, but Fernando Gaviria with fuck all lead out. And also, you know, we probably didn't mention him, you know, mention him tongue in cheek when we, in the preview as the sprinters, but 150 UCI points for Movistar and a second place in the Tour de France stage. Thanks very much for coming. It did help him that there was actually a very high pace and lead outs and he didn't have a stalled opportunity to jump too early, but he did a good sprint. De Lee third, Mads Pedersen fourth, Groenewegen and fifth. He will be, I think, a bit disappointed actually. Bauhaus sixth, Jakobsen seventh, Ballerini sprinting in lieu of Cav, who was caught behind the crash, 8th. Bennett 9th, Lecoq 10th. And yes, Carapaz 14th means that he goes into the yellow jersey. That was the plan for EF Education Easy Post on stage positions ahead of Poggi, Evenepoel, and Vingegaard.
Topic. Binyam Girmay. He wins his Tour de France stage. He's won a Giro stage in the past. He's won Gent Wevelgem before that. I would like to see victories by Binyam inspire more riders from Africa to be able to reach the World Tour level or more teams to scout in that area. But I haven't really seen that too much after him winning that Giro stage, after him winning that Gent Wevelgem stage. Is that, we have a Berge, I think, on Jago.
Yeah, they all come to Italy first, you know.
It's like, what is the main problem? Is it visas?
Visas with Eritreans is a bit more difficult than some other countries, obviously. So that's one difficulty, and it's also access. But it's not just Eritrea. It's just generally speaking that teams scout in their places of expertise or places that they're familiar with, and that's I think a flaw and wrong from teams. Like when I just look sort of country agnostic and look as broad as possible, but. Yeah, but it's also normal. Visma signed Dutch and Belgian riders.
Yeah.
Lotto signed Belgian riders. UAE signed Italian. If there's a good Italian, UAE will take them. Or a Spanish rider.
And that's why having a team like Quebeca back in the day was very special, because that's a team that especially looked for African riders to try and bring that to a new level. And I feel like Q36.5 came back, but it doesn't feel like that team Quebeca was on that regard.
No, and it's not like half the riders were African either.
Chat mentions Froome. No.
Froome is Kenyan, but yeah. EF Education Easy Post, they've generally had a wide variety of countries, but it's also, Benji, the cycling is an expensive sport, and like running, you know, in Kenya, Ethiopia is bigger because, you could also... If you're thinking like long-term money ball, you'd be like, we have all these elite athletes and of the run, like there's a lot of money in cycling in terms of prize money. Like the 50th best World Tour cyclist, they're making fucking bank. Like they are making really, really, really good money for what you would consider their world visibility. Yeah. 50th best runner in the world, they don't make in the 10K. I don't know, the Olympics, maybe, especially if they're Kenyan. I mean, good luck. Kenyan Olympic trials, good luck. So you've got all these elite athletes who probably don't make it. And you think, oh, well, why don't you put them on bikes? And then, you know, they've got VO2 max 90, whatever. And that's obviously physiologically a little bit simplistic, but it's just also just a money thing. It's a racing, you know, it's not just like you can put someone on a bike and they're going to be in the world tour peloton fighting it out in 2 seconds. You look at the GC riders today in this sprint, it's more than just the watts you can push. And it's, yeah, local racing, all that. So unless Benji, some team goes and sets up an academy in these countries.
Mm-hmm. Which happens with Canyon SRAM Generation, no?
I'm not sure.
I think they've got a pretty African focused.
Yeah, yeah, they do. But I don't know if it's they have an academy there, okay, or how it works. But or you do testing there, and you get people to come in and do some testing, and then you offer them the most talented a place in Europe to on a development team or junior team. But yeah, it requires a lot of vision. It requires like a 10-year, 15, 20-year plan.
Yeah.
The UCI, obviously, we should say that the UCI does this themselves. Binnie actually was on the UCI men's club team back in 2019, which, yeah, that's, I think, also Malubran was there. Yeah. So
Debesai as well.
Yeah.
So he was the brother of Mix Debesai, I think.
I would say that's a pretty good strike rate, to be honest. Like, both those, and Malubran's actually like a good rider. And then he got onto Delco the next year. I guess Eritrea itself has a good history of cycling, though. Same with Rwanda a little bit. Eritrea, I think, was an Italian colony. But anyway, that's a long story short. Is I don't have the, it's not an easy answer, Benji. And unless there's like a massive billionaire from Africa,
yeah,
or a corporate that wants that, has that vision, then it's going to be probably the UCI doing it, and they're doing, you know, doing their best. But at the end of the day, it probably will have to be some teams doing it as well, like Canyon SRAM Generation, as you said.
Rwanda Worlds is coming.
Yeah.
So there's some money there too that is seemingly willing to invest in cycling, and they've got the Tour de Rwanda, which is a pretty great race with the Muri Kigali, and that's in the world scores, no? I bloody hope so.
I think the Muri Kigali have to be. Yeah. It's a hilly course.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else from this this sprint stage? Not as maybe overall entertaining as the previous days. We don't really have any answers as to Phillips and Cavendish, Van Aert, and others in the sprint. Mm-hmm. Would have been probably nice to see what they could do. I dare say the Alpecin leadout was nowhere near as dominant as it was last year. That's,
well,
one little answer, although they might have just been caught behind a crash.
And MVP was gone.
That didn't help either, but he's not the man to put them in position in the first place.
Fair.
And it was curious that Rickard was riding early.
Yeah, but then if Van der Poel is gone, their train switches, eh?
Yeah,
so maybe,
yeah,
the rider that was supposed to put them in position didn't do that anymore, because then he's the third last man.
Yeah.
Anyway, not defending them because they were in a shit position, so. Next stage?
Next stage. Stage four from Pinerolo. We get into France. The Tour de France really begins. Pinerolo to Valois. They cross the border. I don't really know where, maybe on over Sestriere is the border, somewhere around there. Don't really know my borders. Sestriere is 40 Ks long, 3.7% up to 2,050 meters, a stepped climb. It's got like 4 or 5 Ks at 6% at the end. So really, it actually, even though they're like, oh, it's only at 4%, but there actually is basically like false flats and then actual 5-6%, horrible long climb. Descent, then up the Col de Montgenèvre, which is 8.3 Ks at 6%. Both of those are Category 2 climbs. And that has a steep section in the first 3 Ks. Two of those Ks are about 8% on Montgenèvre. So it starts reasonably hard. The intermediate sprint, by the way, is at 20 Ks into the stage. So ASO is, I dare say, trying to help Philipsen out there. I think Mads Pedersen might be a bit annoyed at that intermediate sprint placement. He would have hoped it's after Sestriere or Montgenèvre. But anyway, they did the same last year, I seem to recall.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Col du Galibier then follows Ginevra, which is 23Ks, 5%. It's on the big road. Mm-hmm. And then they turn onto the last 6 or 7Ks, which are actually, or 8Ks, I think, which are about 6.5%. So I would say it's harder at the end. The first part of the Galibier really is not hard at all.
Attrition.
Yeah, it's just burning energy, frankly. You're not going to make any gaps or anything like that. And it's up to 2,600 meters. It's the Souvenir Henri de Grange. I do think it is double points on KOM.
I'm not sure about that. The rules don't say that.
They don't?
No.
Okay. There's also a bonus sprint on top, 8, 5, and 2 to induce even more GC action. And it's an HC climb. So a lot of points regardless, and then a descent with almost no flat to the finish. 140K stage in 120 kilometers of this stage, 4,000 meters climbing in 120 kilometers. So in terms of intensity, very, very high. In terms of difficult steep sections, no, not there, but a lot of long climbing. I don't really have a good handle on this stage, Benji. I really don't know what's going to happen.
I don't either, because on one end, it's a relatively short stage. So if you want to win the stage, it's controllable. But then who is going to control? You've got EF in the yellow jersey, which is EF a team that would want to honor the jersey and try and keep it with Carapaz? Which I think, yes, actually.
How do you keep it?
I think you keep the breakaway under control.
No, don't you let the break go and hope that Poggi doesn't take bonies on top of Galibier in the sprint?
It depends, eh? Because like, If you look at the race, then if the breakaway includes riders that are close, they'll have to control it.
Yeah, then you have to. I mean, try to do what DSM did.
True. Ideally, you get a breakaway that has riders on 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
That's ideal. Then you got the bonus seconds to Pogacar, and then you hope that disincentivizes Pogacar and Vingegaard going mental on Galibier, which not sure that will do it, but...
Because like, even if you think Carapaz can hang with Pogacar and Vingegaard, generous, I would say.
Generous,
but
correct.
Even if you think that, no way they think he can outsprint Poggi on top of a bony sprint.
Do you not then try and bet on two things and put someone in the breakaway as well that could take jersey? I don't know.
I don't know
who's close at EF.
I would put Healy in the break, or you know who's good. You know who's actually quite good on these stages. Rui Costa.
Paulus as well.
Paulus,
he's close.
Yeah, Paulus on these gradual climbs. I don't know where he is on GC.
I'm checking.
I reckon he dropped badly the other day.
He's on 1 minute 51.
That's a mistake if he wanted to go for the stage. But I don't know where Costa is either. He might be too close on. I feel like EF are kind of, they're in yellow, so I'm not going to say they're making loads of mistakes, but if they're trying to win stages as well. Okay, being in the jersey for a day is nice.
Yeah.
But they're here to win stages, and having Paulus, Costa, and Healy so close on GC before this stage is a mistake. It's a planning mistake. Unless, Benji, you're happy to lose yellow to your own rider.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing
if
you want.
Because, like, Visma and UAE don't care if Nielsen, Paulus, or Costa, or Healy take the jersey by 4 minutes. So maybe it's not a mistake and you just swap it to that rider.
I think that's the strategy you try to do. You try and put your own rider that's close in GC in the breakaway. You hope that, or you try to make that there's no other riders that are close in GC in the breakaway. Or hope that Paulus can drop them on the climbs.
Yeah.
And you try to get your teammate your yellow. Sure, Carapaz loses it, but it's still within the team.
Yeah.
And then Carapaz can...
And you can keep it for a few days then.
Yeah, exactly. But EF aside, the two main teams that we're looking at is UAE and Visma. And when it comes to Visma, I'll give you my take. I find it hard to guess with both teams, by the way, what they're planning. Because... Actually, I'm going to start with UAE. The way we've seen in the last few days that they've used Yates to lead out Pogacar on San Luca, Ayuso and Almeida have been riding basically their own race. So Yates kind of dropped them on San Luca. So it's kind of a mixed signal on they're still keeping their potential co-leaders, but they're also actively killing them.
Yeah. And Ayuso in the sprint today was like up there like a GC guy on Poggi's wheel, not taking a pull, staying safe.
So I wonder whether UAE has this master plan of, did we try to keep our co-leaders close in GC because we want to try something on the Galibier stage with our multi-leader strategies? That's a possibility. But
well, this is a stage to do it if you're going to do it before one of them is inevitably going to have a major issue.
But Almeida is not the guy you send in the breakaway on a stage like this. It's more Ayuso that I'm looking at as the, but then...
Oh, you mean in the break?
That's an option. Like, an attack halfway to stage, I'm not sure how effective that's going to be, because Pismar's just going to go to the front. Vingegaard's not going to react to a Yuzu and Almeida. You're going to see the train of Visma going to the front and starting to gradually pace behind him.
Mr. Lemon. Mr. Lemon will just, just pace a minute behind, and these climbs are 5%, 3%. Like, it's not... But then, Benji, if they get in a big breakaway, gets out of control, it's not like you're riding, you know, on your own against them. So I don't know exactly, but I would...
Even if that breakaway fails and Ayuso is kind of burnt that way, Visma will have been chasing during the day.
Yeah.
And they will have used their team throughout the day, and that maybe gives some options later. I don't know. I'm just scratching at straws here.
I don't see them using that way. I would... Before the race, I thought they would do a pace on Sestriere with Pollitt.
Yeah.
And then a pace on... and then the end of Sestriere with Soler.
Yeah.
Then I thought they'd go Soler, Sivakov, or Montgenèvre. And then I thought they'd try to get them also to do the easy part of Galibier, and then launch attacks on when they turn onto the proper part of the Galibier at the last 9Ks is what I thought they'd do. Pollitt said in the media, Luke, or you sent me a tweet from somebody that said Fabian Wegman said that Pollitt told him before stage one that UAE wanted to launch on stage four. The problem is that their actual domestiques, the real domestiques on UAE, they can't do 6 watts per kilo for 5 minutes the last couple of days on back-to-back climbs.
True.
So Almeida's in good shape. Yates is in good shape. Ayuso looks to be in better shape yesterday, but... Yeah, like what pace can Pollitt and Soler and Sivakov set? Maybe a good one. Sivakov probably, but Wellens and Pollitt climbing has not looked so good.
And then when it comes to Visma, I'm thinking, okay, they've kind of gained confidence, I think, over the last two stages when it comes to Vingegaard. So is Visma going to see this opportunity and is going to say like, okay, we might not have been planning to do something here because we weren't sure about Vingegaard. Maybe we'll try and do something on the stage now, but doing something there, the only two options that I see that they've done in the past is either they send a satellite rider up the road like Wout van Aert like back in the day, or they base each climb and try and put energy expenditure into someone, into Pogacar, obviously, is their competitor. But this is not the stage where I expect Vingegaard to drop Pogacar either.
No, because at the end of the day, it's 6%, and they couldn't drop each other on Tourmalet, and then Vingegaard overextended on Carteret and Poggi countered him. But on a 6% climb, let's say the attack phase starts in the last 3Ks at 6%. I mean, maybe Poggi... In theory, it should suit Poggi more, though, because it's not that steep. And there's bonies. I mean, do UAE really not care about bonies? Seems not.
I know.
18 seconds is 18 seconds, man.
It is. Bonies might be the reason that UAE decides to control.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
and it's not 18 seconds, eh?
No, because on the other stage, it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't have been. On stage one, it could have been bonies because Vingegaard wouldn't have been anywhere near the sprint. But yesterday, Vingegaard would have taken the second position. So,
yeah. And here, Vingegaard would on paper be losing the sprint to Pogacar. So that's...
Yeah.
He would lose a 3-second delta at the bonus sprint and
four
at the finish, indeed. So that's 7 in total. But is still worth it if you can do this multiple times over a Grand Tour.
The whole descent and then the last flat bit, he might not even ride with you.
Yeah.
So,
but then again, if he doesn't ride with you, what's the worst thing that can happen? That Emco catches up and he sprints as well and...
Yeah.
Well, actually, that might help Pogacar because that might be a rider in between them.
They might lose a stage though.
Yeah, but he might gain more bonus seconds.
I think he'd want to take this stage. Make sure he takes the stage, yeah. Remco's sprint is not too shabby, actually. And also someone like Carapaz. I mean, Carapaz, again, he was so good yesterday. Will he just auto-drop on this climb? I don't think if the big two start attacking properly each other, I would not expect Carapaz to be there. But if they start to play games, slow down, then for sure he can come back. The descent is fast, not too technical, straight down to Valois. The weather forecast is like mild to warm conditions, bit of cloud cover, nothing severe, no rain most likely. As I said at the start, I'm no closer to having an ideal handle on what's going to happen. before the race, I would have said UAE are going to absolutely nuke it. Now I'm not so sure. I think, but then it's so short. How can the break win?
True.
Yeah.
My eyes are also on the podium battle. When it comes to Remco, when it comes to Roglic, will Roglic show again a place of vulnerability on the Galibier climb? We'll see. Is Remco as strong on these mountain stage as he was on the San Luca stage? Because on the San Luca stage, we rewatched that last climb yesterday evening, and Remco was in a horrible position. Roglic as well, but Remco's the one that made it back to the front. And he then had trouble reacting to Pogacar, or didn't react because he needed to recover from that effort of coming back to the front. I'm wondering how close Remco would have been if he was in good position, and how close he can be on Galibier. I don't know.
That's the real key. And I think Remco, this is a big moment for him. Big mountain, 2,600 meters against the two big guns in good shape. We'll see. I again think if they start kicking off, he probably should just do choo-choo at his own pace.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Because
I would do that if I was him.
It's like it's not really the same as O'Connor trying to respond to Vingegaard, because O'Connor would clearly lose from Vingegaard.
Yeah.
When it comes to Rango versus Pogacar and Vingegaard, I feel like he's that just like in the middle of, should I ride my own race and let these guys fight each other, or should I actually try to react on them? And I don't know which one he'll go for.
I think he should do it like G in the Tour 2022.
But are you then not giving up your chance to potentially win?
No,
a podium?
You got to hope they cancel each other out.
Okay.
And yeah, if one cracks as well, you might even be able to go past him if they overextend. So I would do it like I would ride his pace. And he's also got to do the maths that if he's in good shape and he rides absolutely full gas TT style, the gap can't be that big. It just won't be that big because he's so aero on 6%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. It's the aero that really makes the difference, because if it's any other rider, I'd say, the draft is gone, etc. But I just wonder how close he'll be at the end of the stage, because after this, the next obstacle is the time trial where he can take yellow.
Stage 7, Remco will win that stage.
Yeah.
So, but then counterpoint to what I just said, Benji, Remco's not the best descender. So if he's not on the wheel for that long descent, he could be losing 25 seconds compared to being on the wheel.
But it's not a technical descent.
It's not, but the other two are much better descenders than he is. They really
are. But yesterday,
he didn't take any time on the descent.
But he didn't lose any either.
True. I don't think, maybe not. The cameras refused to show poor old Remco yesterday. And when he said Carapaz wasn't helping him.
Are we underrating Carapaz for a stage that goes over 2,000 meters?
No, I think Carapaz should be good here.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if Carapaz is again not with the top two, but with Remco, or in the top five again. Carapaz should be good here, I would expect. And maybe EF do just fully back him. I'm not sure. This is a big test for Carlos Rodriguez. Okay, you can say Bologna didn't suit him, but he shouldn't be getting hard. He shouldn't be getting put into group three, group four here. Yep. That's really not good enough. Bernal is also over the 2,600 meters. You know, do they then move him to co-leader if Rodriguez suffers here? I don't know how they'll play it.
Pidcock, also 21 seconds in GC, I think.
Yeah, Pidcock. Like, this is the stage I said he could win from the breakaway.
Too close.
Now he's too close on GC and he won't be allowed on the break. And I don't think it's going to be slow enough that he can just attack over the top for a descent victory. Roglic is also, this is a cliche, Benji, but you shouldn't be winning the Tour tomorrow. Normally, I don't expect anyone to win the Tour tomorrow, but maybe Poggi just rides away. But if you really get dropped tomorrow, that's a bad sign.
Yeah. When it comes to other riders, I think Felix Gall will be good on the climb, but shit on the descent.
Yep.
I think Almeida should be much better on this than on the San Luca climb.
Yep.
Ayuso was better on stage 2 than stage 1. I don't know what to expect from him on stage 3.
I think it'll be fine. I think it'll just be like fine.
Is it better that it's a super long climb? Because I feel like Ayuso is kind of like Del Toro, where the longer the climb is, the more he comes back.
For UAE, I think it's better than the punchy stage yesterday, because the fight for position into the base is not as impactful. They can move up. So yeah, tomorrow it does suit them more, I think, actually. Will suit their leaders more. Who are we picking?
I want the GC fight for this. I'm sorry, but I've loved the romance of the last 2 days. but now I want shit to get done. I want the GC team to control. I'm going to bet on UAE. And I still want to get a surprise winner, though. It doesn't really work that way, does it? I think Pogacar is going to win the stage.
Okay, I'll go with Vingegaard winning the stage.
And if we had to pick someone that isn't Pogacar and Vingegaard, based on yesterday, you'd go Remco, but it's a very different stage. I'll go Almeida. Makes no sense, but I'll do it.
Probably Yates then. But then the descent for little man, I don't know. But Yates is probably the third best climber in this race, so I'd go Yates.
Do we not believe in a breakaway? Because I feel like we did before the race started.
I did, but I don't know. Like 40K, how long is 40K's up Sestriere? An hour and a half?
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Like, an hour and a half just out the gate of false flat to 5% climbing. It really depends when the break goes and who's in it and who controls. If I'd seen guys deliberately losing time who I thought had a chance, like Pidcock, then I would be like, he's going in the break. He's going to win. Maybe Kwiatkowski goes in the breakaway. I don't know. But
yeah. With a stage like this, with a descent finish, I actually kind of like Carlos as well, but he hasn't shown that ability to be close to anyone anyway. So it's kind of like,
I don't see it quite so much.
I don't see it either.
Yeah. I don't think Poggi will make that mistake again. Vingegaard indeed made the mistake by not being first wheel through that corner. But okay, I've got Vingegaard. Benji's got Pogacar. We're hoping for GC action and a GC winner of the stage. And maybe it'll indeed be more than that. I'm sure there will be gaps, whether they come back on the descent, whether people press the advantage. I do think if you're Ineos and Rodriguez feels good, I already said it on stage one, when you see Ayuso struggling, you put the knife in. If your goal is podium, now maybe their goal is to win the Tour de France, in which case don't do it, but if your goal is podium and you see Almeida, Ayuso, Roglic weak.
Yates. Another Yates.
I would put the knife in. Even if it looks like you're dumb pacing for Pogacar to win the stage, if Rodriguez feels good. And it works the other way. It works the other way for Bora. Or no, they don't, they're going for the win. I don't know.
One final thing before we finish it off. We've had two watch-alongs on stage one and two on YouTube. So basically, we watched the last hour of the race in front of our TV, and we live stream our reactions to YouTube. So you can check that out, be in the chat and so forth. Use us as alternative audio, kind of.
Yeah.
But are we going to do it for tomorrow's stage? Because we didn't do it for the sprint, because let's be honest about it. We didn't feel like doing it for a sprint.
Tomorrow we'll do it from the base of the lottery. Okay. So we'll do the last 40 kilometers, which should take about an hour and a half.
I'm doing my veto for 45. I want to see some of Lotterer.
Okay, we'll do 45 kilometers then. But yeah, that was the sprint stage today. Big GC stage tomorrow. Hope you enjoyed it as always, and we'll see you the recap of stage four then. Ciao.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.